This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 13th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Affinity, Reality, and Communication. This lecture is 57 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right. Our main concern in the entire subject of auditing stems from one of the oldest items we have, the ARC triangle, in which the role of communication has become paramount. It has been discovered that the role of communication is modified by the roles of affinity and reality, but that communication is so much more important than the roles of affinity and reality that these other two items can almost be neglected today. Almost, not quite. The triangle affinity, reality, and communication was conceived by myself in July of 1950. A great deal of speculation ensued over the next few years in an effort to discover the relative importance of the various corners, if there was a difference of importance, if there was a difference, if one was more important than another. Let me call to your attention that reality is the most important corner from the viewpoint of past psychotherapies and is not a workable corner, which in itself explains the failure of past psychotherapies when they failed. R is not the answer. R is a little bit of the answer. And so we had a little bit of a result. But in view of the fact that past psychotherapies were unable to change the intelligence of an individual and were unable, and this they advertisedly said they could not do, even to a point of becoming very angry at the thought of anyone doing it. By the way, I do think old psychotherapies occasionally did change IQ. That's my private opinion. I just think they were doing a bad piece of observation. But it's in their textbooks quite solidly that it can't happen. The role of reality descends into solidity and mist. And when an organization begins to go along, an organization of thought or logic, begins to carry on a certain specific field or corner, see, they didn't even know the triangle existed, but they were carrying along one corner of this non-extant triangle, as far as they were concerned, and that was reality. And when it goes along the line of reality, it winds up using mist as a cure. But let's look over that, because in that right there, we have an explanation of an awful lot of randomity which has occurred through the world of mental healing. And that is, when emphasis is put on reality, they then get a solidification of reality itself, and that is, of course, mist. And therefore, they would start out trying to find reality as the keynote of difficulty in the patient, reality, lack of, and failing then to get an immediate recovery because an investigation of reality did not bear fruit in this patient, they would, of course, then, naturally, solidify a little bit and go in for a little bit heavier and mestier type of reaction, and would finally start administering compounds, drugs, you see, which is just the same corner being used, and would finally go into the complete, actually psychotic, desperation of the prefrontal lobotomy and the electric shock. These are just dramatizations. They're not cures. I want you to understand that clearly. because it actually isn't a bad intention on the part of an old psychotherapy. It was an incorrect selection of key or stable data. We ourselves, up within the last year, still used every now and then this corner reality. We still carried along with us this mysterious thing, which was the high tide of all processes in that direction. Remember something that's really real. See? We still had that as a button. See, we still used that. That was still important to us within the very year in which I'm talking to you right this minute. And then with newer things and better things and a better understanding, a complete clarification came about on two points. One, that consideration is actually the top dog of all mist. See, the thought, the consideration, the thinking, the thought is senior to all mist. We can prove that today. See? But just about 7 months ago, I remember sitting back and saying, well, that's that. Sat back at my desk and tossed a bunch of papers in the air and said, to hell with it. No more am I going to be confused on this very interesting point. Does mist cause a change of sanity? Does it ever cause a change of sanity? Is it ever senior to the ability to consider? And I found out it never was. Well, this isn't the subject particularly of this lecture. But it became very apparent through examining, you see, the number of cases examined in Dianetics and Scientology just moves up into the thousands and thousands and thousands. I mean, it's a vast series. It's huge. And an examination of all these cases brought this about. And this is when and where we got this whole thing cognition, you see. That when a person was audited and failed to change his mind, he didn't improve. And we had a complete series with this fact never being disobeyed. Nobody ever improved mentally without changing his mind about something. You could move around more messed in the individual. You could practically pick up a bad leg and put a good leg in its place or something. But if the individual didn't go spark on the subject, we got no basic change in the individual. We were auditing something which had as its highest ability the ability to exist, postulate, and consider. Exist, postulate, and consider. Those are three different accents. We had this being. And if we audited what he was holding on to, he never won. If we audited him, we won. And what he was holding on to never really changed him. Follow this? Now, we could get an individual exteriorized in excellent condition, and he'd go along, and we'd audit him, and his body get a little better, and he'd feel better about the whole thing, and his body get a little better, and so on, and we'd audit him, and audit him, and audit him, and audit him, and wow, he wasn't improving one iota on the tone scale. And he was getting audited all over the place. How very fascinating. He was exteriorized, he had perception. He never made any improvement. Unless he regained the ability to change his mind. The mechanical effect and fact of exteriorization is valueless in the absence of the ability to consider. And from consideration stems even this thing we call a physical universe. Therefore, all that is important in the field of the mind is the ability to consider improvement thereof. And it doesn't matter how much mess you cart in and how many trucks you drive up, filled with how many types of bricks. It doesn't matter how many laboratories you build that makes how many kinds of fluids which you inject. The only thing you will ever finish doing with any of these things is treating something the Thetan, quote, is holding in his hand. You hear that? So you could go on treating and doing something to and about this thing the Thetan is holding in his hand. And he'd be real happy because this thing he's holding in his hand is now in better shape. He has said, now here's this thing, and here it is, and this is an item. And I'm dissatisfied with its condition. Maybe you and I together can alter its condition, and you and I will then work to alter its condition. And you did by orthopedics or drugs or surgery or something. You did alter its condition. And he said, that's better. He accumulated some liabilities by having its condition altered, but nevertheless, he could say, that's better. The highest possible change of consideration because of changing mist. That's better. Get the idea? The recognition, at least, that has been changed. But all this time, you've only treated something the living being was holding in his hand. And you might as well have been winding up or patching up a toy doll. The life in it. The life in the body. The life in the doll, not too far apart. It's on a gradient scale almost. It isn't that a body is alive and a doll is dead. No. If there was a Thetan in the doll would be alive. If there's a Thetan in the body can be alive. If we're going to work with life, let's work with life. Well, then what does life do? Life changes its mind. Life considers. 7 months ago, looking at psychometrics by the ton. Very, very careful program. Carried on not at great expense, such as should have been done. The U.S. government had been carrying on this program. We'd just now be getting into it. We'd just now be getting the forms printed by which to requisition the psychometric blanks, you know? But working completely offside and away from, you see, the ardors of research and all that sort of thing. We were nevertheless testing every student that walked into the school, and we were retesting them when they left. We were testing every preclear that walked in and sat there, and every preclear that went out. And we just tested them, and we stacked it up, and we tested them, we stacked it up, we tested them, we stacked it up. And we kept a running common denominator of the daily sessions. The common denominator I was tracking was, what is changing here? What change did the preclear make, which was then followed by a change in the preclear? It wouldn't have mattered if I was the most hard-bitten materialist who had ever been born. I would have had to have been almost the stupidest man alive not to have eventually accepted this evidence. It wasn't set up to be accepted or warped in either way. It was simply set up as is. What changed? Well, we found conclusively that where the preclear did not have the ability to change his mind, he had lost the ability to change mist. But when we could get him to regain the ability to change his mind, he could then change mist. But we could change mist without getting him to change his mind. We couldn't get the thing to flow back. But we could get it to flow forward. And this in hundreds of cases. This became possible when a psychometrist came on staff in Phoenix. And a great deal of psychometrics already existed, a great deal of case material was already there. And we simply started throwing this together, and she started, because she was an expert psychometrist, started throwing the most significant batteries of which we had any record, which were available, real standard psychometric tests, perfectly delivered, We started throwing these at everybody. Boy, we had been hopeful occasionally on a PC when we shouldn't have been. This was what they showed us. Of course, the final analysis, I'll take the word of the auditor before I'll take the word of a test. But that's just because I'm fond of auditors. A test tells you very conclusively and precisely that something has occurred, or it tells you something hasn't occurred. Now, a person can change his mind and write a better test. Did you know that? An individual can say to himself, now I'm going to answer this as a clear would answer it, and get a much better test within certain finite limits. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? That he can just change his mind and get a better test. That's the only way we know of that a test can be thrown. And that really isn't throwing a test at all, is it? Because we've asked people to change their mind now. Now get the idea, you're clear, now answer the test here. He didn't answer it like clear. But he answered it a little bit better. And at the end of the test program and so forth, while we had him answer it the same way, we tried to throw these tests in various directions, color them in various ways, and we found this is not feasible. They're standard. You can believe them. With great enthusiasm, the auditor audits this pre-clear and gets him all straightened up. He says, the fellow's walking better, he's talking better. The fellow actually has less limp. The fellow can work more. All these are observable. Utterly observable. And his IQ is raised 1 point. The error on the test is a potential 4 points. The test varies about 4 points. And the preclear says he's no better. And a personality analysis on the preclear shows no change. The individual is functioning better. He's observedly acting better. He is doing better. You can see it. You can see it, but he can't. And do you know that he won't use these better abilities? He won't use them. This is fabulous. You haven't improved his livingness or his consideration about his fellow man. None of these things have been improved. He's still as critical as he was. He's still as antisocial as he was. All you did was fix up the thing he was holding in his hand, see? You fixed up this body. Here's the Thetan. He's got a body. You know, here's a body. You fixed it up. You didn't fix up his livingness. He didn't even say that's better. You said that. Mind you now, he's observably working better. He's looking better. And you eventually would say, actually, there's something wrong with it. You put your finger right on it, by the way. If you incorrectly interpret it, you say, there's something wrong with this fellow's intentions. He just doesn't want to get well, that's all. He's on a succumb postulate. He's this, he's that. He's just trying to prove all the auditors wrong. I never heard so many alibis. I should have kept a list of the number of alibis I've been doing. But all of these alibis add up to just one thing. The auditor did not bring the preclear to change the preclear's mind. Now, who can change the preclear's mind? The preclear. That's the person that can change the preclear's mind. It's the only person around. You can't come in with a club and make the preclear change his mind upward. You can make it change his mind downward, see? You could force him to change his mind, but have you forced him to change his mind at all, or have you just shifted his valence or done something else to him? Or have you brought him closer to this object he's holding? Very funny thing. Do you know that you can beat people and beat them and beat them and beat them, and very often they don't change their mind at all? This is the awfulest thing for a man to have to face. It is a fact so unsavory that people seldom face it. They feel they can always take a club and beat the guy into doing something. They can take a club and beat him into doing something. Or they can shout him into doing something or rave him into doing something. And so they beat and shout and rave, and all too often no change of mind has occurred. Most defeating thing you ever saw. You beat this human being, and you do all sorts of things to him because he insists on walking over to the wall and pasting a placard on it. You know, the placard says, Viva Reales, or something, you know. And so we jail him, and we beat him, and we kick him, and we say, now, you see, now are you good and loyal to Das King? And so forth. You're all set now. That's the way it is, because you know how you are. And so forth. And we let him loose, and there he is, pasting a little more carefully, but pasting the poster on the wall that says Viva Reales. Well, I tell you how we get even with him. We'll take some members of his village. We'll shoot him. And this fellow goes on pasting on the wall, Viva Reales. You'd say this fellow wasn't smart. Well, then you'd have to say that about all of mankind. They're not smart enough to change when mess changes. That'd be the full statement. If they were really smart, they would change when mess changes, if they believed that they had to conform to their environment. If they believed this as a stable datum, then they might get smart enough to change when the environment changed, and you might be able to beat somebody into doing something. That would be the totality of the operation, you see. You'd have to get them to accept this as a stable datum first. If there was some relationship to their changingness in the environment, you could get them then to make that postulate, and then you could get them to carry forward and change. But you hadn't changed their mind with MEST. You changed their mind by making them put in a new stable datum, saying they should. And they had to do that. They had to do that on their own free will. Then we could sneak up on them afterwards. We could have somebody assume, well, it's a nice, safe environment, and sit down with his back to it, you know, and then throw a spear into him. We've made him wrong, haven't we? We didn't really change his mind, though. When you pick him up and audit him a few thousand years later, you know what you get? It's a nice, safe environment. He's got a spear sticking in his back. But if we said, now, you know, all wisdom is now available unto you, and the basic part of that wisdom is so and so and so and so and so and so, and you agree all this and you're all set, then we slide in, and man is successful because he conforms to his environment. And we could say, hey, what do you know? He is successful because he conforms to his environment. You know, he walks around on two legs with that much gravity and does this and that. Oh, it's real interesting. You see, it's a true statement if it applies to a body. You get how slippy this is. This is totally true if it applies to the body. But if you then apply it to the Thetan two, you add this terrifically wild variable. So therefore, any such study carefully convinces you at the same time that only a body is there. And follow me? That we're only dealing with a body. And therefore, we mustn't look at all these wild vagaries which occur. And we'll all comfortably go along on the theory that if we just beat somebody enough, then he'll change his mind, he'll be a good boy, and so forth. And this never works, and nobody ever notices it working, but they keep on doing it. Because it's true where the body is concerned. You can get a body to change with the environment. You can hit a guy in the nose hard enough to break it. You changed the nose, didn't you? Well, the hidden datum is here, did you change the guy? Well, you might modify his presentation to the society to the effect that he went around shyly offering, the more shyly offering this broken nose. Or did you change his mind? Now, how many people who have had a broken nose have you noticed being shy? That'd be the proof of it. A person didn't care to show his face. Once in a while, a mine explosion, a fellow will wear a mask over the mine explosion. It may even be, this is a horrible thing, it may even be that he had a tendency to wear and wanted to wear a mask and so got his face blown off so he could wear a mask. I remember when I was a little boy, we used to have these cereals of one kind or another, and the hooded terror. All the little boys in the neighborhood were going around with black stocking hoods over their faces, you know, for a long time. Everybody was very enthused with the idea of wearing a mask. Good game. Everybody wear a mask. See, we might have had another look at it at all. This individual might not have been changed. He might not be hiding himself, because he has a blown-off face. He might have a blown-off face so he can hide himself. It sounds like very slippy logic, but either way, it could be stated with the same conviction. We could state it either way, and maybe neither way is true. See, maybe neither way is true. So it might be that if we put a prefrontal lobotomy into somebody, and he got himself in a situation where he got a prefrontal lobotomy, maybe he got himself into the situation so he'd get a prefrontal lobotomy. It might be, you see. And conversely, he might have been given a prefrontal lobotomy and then would be in the... This isn't certain. There is no certainty there at all. Everybody thinks this thing called MEST provides us with such a great certainty, in other words, such a huge reality. And it does not provide us with such a huge reality. It does not provide us with this. It provides us with some stable forms with finite locations, which we then can have as confusion or as an unconfusion. It provides us with a game, provides us with a playing field, but it does not provide us with an answer to the mind. It provides us with everything but an answer to the mind. We don't know whether it's chronically associated with it or not. Every once in a while we start running some fellow who's having an awful time on R220 problems and solutions. We ask him another problem and another problem and another problem. All of a sudden he has this horrible cognition. He says, you know, I'm just making problems so that I'll dream up solutions for them. And right away he'll shut that down. Big relief. He may have a lot of orderly problems stacked up one kind or another that he can have or he can't have. Now, the mystery and wonder of it is that you as an auditor can change this individual. But remember, everything I've been saying right up to this moment in this lecture, everything I've said in this hour, has been limited to the handling of the R corner of the triangle. So therefore, we can go off on almost any idiocy we want to if we insist on handling only the R corner of the ARC triangle. All right, now let's just handle the A corner. And that's about the most puzzling corner you ever had anything to do with. Of course, reality is also agree-disagree, but the A corner is affinity. And now if we say affinity is just love, we wind ourselves up in a slot, because that means that there is a good emotion called love, and then there are a lot of other things, but then they would have no place to be, and they would be indeterminate, so on. I'm afraid that hate is on the gradient scale, as we descend down the line, that hate belongs in the A corner of the triangle. It is a type of, or a perversion of, or a twist on, if you please, but it is still an affinity of sorts. So any emotion is then an affinity of sorts. Now, if you've ever gotten stuck to MEST, if you've ever gotten stuck to this stuff called MEST, that is to say you've been out of your body and you've leaned up against it and you haven't let go, that too is an affinity of sorts. See, there is something else going on here, an affinity. An affinity means to some degree a coexistence with, or an ability to understand with, or an ability to be. And actually affinity is the consideration of the distance. That's what affinity technically is to us. Affinity is the consideration of the distance. You upset the distance and you will upset affinities. Just easy to do this. And it's easier than you think. It goes on inversions back and forth, so you can't say the bigger the distance, the more the affinity, or the bigger the distance, the less the affinity, you see. It's not broadly that way. It goes on inversions. We increase the distance and we get more affinity, and we increase the distance and we get less affinity, and we increase the distance and we get more affinity, and increase the distance and we get less affinity. I mean, we might as well have that happening too, you see. Or we decrease the distance, we have more affinity. We decrease it more and we have less affinity. And we decrease it more and we have more affinity. And we decrease it more and we have less affinity. It just doesn't matter. It's the consideration, if you please, of the distance. Now, I must have affinity for this. Here's a consideration. I must have affinity for this because I am inside of it. Fellow thinks that of his body. And then he starts to pull out 1/16 of an inch, and he says, how I hate this body. I am much too close to it. He has changed his consideration with regard to the body, so he has changed his affinity with regard to the body. But basically, all he changed was his affinity. And this represents itself in distances. If you don't like something, you either want to be right in there, knocking it to pieces, or way away from it, not even looking at it. See? Affinity is consideration of distance. All right. It is also the consideration of reaction and effect. Consideration of reaction and effect. It's also intention. But it is expressed to all of us as emotion toward or about. See? That's what it is. Now, if we change affinity, we're going to change the R and the C slightly. If we just change affinity, we'll change the R and the C slightly. An earlier psychotherapy known as Christianity, and it was practiced very early as a sort of psychotherapy, it was how to be free and how to be all set up about life and so forth. You just believe this and you believe that and you were all set, fella. And here we go, see? Sort of a psychotherapy, if you want to twist it over. Of course, it is a religion, we know that. But a religion is the ritual of worship or regard about spiritual matters. And that defines also a psychotherapy. Because a religion has the intention of changing, and so does a psychotherapy. Changing what? Spiritual regard, reaction, so forth. They're so close together that the Catholic Church has practiced them almost indiscriminately for the last couple of thousand years. Well, early Christianity was very much needed because a lot of people had gone completely mad. We had a slave society going very nicely, and it had fallen out of adjustment so that no slave could be happy being a slave and no freeman could be happy being a freeman, and freemen were slaves and slaves were freemen, and everybody was getting taxed. Nobody knew who the emperor was. We otherwise had a big confusion. Into this confusion was injected the stable datum Christianity. And Christianity, therefore, caught fire. It went in all directions, and everybody was very happy about this whole thing. And they used it as a mechanism to change people's minds. And boy, they changed an awful lot of minds before they were through. So it was quite successful as a psychotherapy. Of course, they only really changed their minds in one of two directions. They either went up into ecstasy or down into degradation. They were either so sinful or the otherwise. But if you were to follow the original formulas of Christianity, you would find yourself more often winding up in degradation than in ecstasy. And why would that be? Well, it's a very simple thing, very simple mechanism. They said, repent, repent ye, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Repent. Now, if we define this and we look it over, we find this horrible thing taking place. We find that we're supposed to regret our acts. And to regret your acts, you have to get them into present time. And then to regret them further, you have to reverse them in their cycle of action. You hit the fellow over the head. The action of regret, that is the action of regret, is to unhit them over the head. It's very tricky. So, of course, they'd stick people on the time track. Well, they could occasionally stick them into religious implantations and other things equally well. Well, this Christianity was a very interesting thing from the standpoint of changing men's minds. Very often, somebody come along and say, I'm free as a bird, and wonderful things have happened to me, and so on. He changed his mind about the universe and about God and about a lot of things and about his destiny and his hopes in hell and so forth. And his future then was rearranged as far as he was concerned. And he was convinced this was true. Now, they added quite unnecessarily the factor of faith and belief. Faith, belief, conviction, and proof. And as soon as they added proof, Christianity started to go by the boards and is practically by the boards now. You see how you do this? All you had to do is get another determined faith, and you would eventually get another determined desire for conviction, which would bring you to the level of proving it. You want to convince somebody of proving it. Well, if you ever want to have a interesting time with your preclear and run proof, this is a very interesting thing to do. And you get realities as masses. Realities as masses when you start right into proof. Proof goes over then into the R factor. Well, Christianity tried to specialize in affinity. Love, they said. And this was supposed to be the hot stuff. And the funny part of it was the hot stuff. All they had to do was stand around loving thy neighbor and giving people a hand, and the next thing you know, they really had a community. Things would be running along real nice, and everybody would be a lot happier, and so forth. And some guys would get hit by too much of this it's good postulate and start to blow up. And they'd hold themselves from blowing up and say, I'm really a very evil man. I am now a hermit. I'm a whirling dervish, and go dancing down the road. Scream, scream, scream. I have just been visited by St. Vitus. You get the idea? There were some chaps in the community who couldn't take the postulate. The idea of loving people and being good to people was too much for them because they skidded at once into the second postulate that they were evil, arrived at by other people's considerations. And they go zoom, boom. And you get Christians a few centuries later, the medieval Christian, specializing in telling people how evil he was. He was trying to run it out. Only it wasn't his to run out. So he kind of lost on the deal. You follow me, the whole idea? Well, where then Christianity won? It won by reinforcing the first postulate, good. Love. Love thy neighbor. Help thy neighbor. Go into communication with thy neighbor, followed, but they really didn't talk too much about that. They're supposed to go into communication to prove to him the... And we're sitting over here with a solid R. And so the triangle would start downscale because they used communication to prove, to convert, to do other things, you see, besides just communicate. So they, of course, would wind up hating everybody. See? If you had to convert everybody to Christianity and you had to prove to them the signs and wonders and the good book and prove to them this way, you get a solider and solider R, and you start to see churches building, which were awfully large, heavy, thick, solid churches. Now, the original community and the original Christian rites had nothing to do with mass on that scale. The early villages that adopted Christianity simply started to run at high C. They just were having a fine time, believe me. Love thy neighbor, everybody's a pal, let's get in here and pitch one way or the other, see? But, of course, occasionally you'd get this fellow who'd practically go out the bottom up against this first postulate, and he would get tired and he would get lazy. And the other fellow who would almost go out the bottom on the basis of solidity, blowing up, he'd go mad, in other words. There's too much action and violence there, too much evil, he would say. And he'd run around trying to run this out. And so we got these randomities. It was not a panacea because it wasn't completely understood. And then they started to make mysteries, and that cut down the understanding more and more. And finally, the modern church has lost its understanding of religion. That's an awfully broad statement, but it's just bang, I mean, that's true. You don't believe me, you go around and shake the hands of a few of the boys. And if it's a psychotherapy, then so is a prefrontal lobotomy. Here's one, though, that followed the A corner. Get it? It followed the A corner of this ARC triangle. It started out with love. And now, over here, we had our psychotherapies specializing in reality, and they go in to treating with MEST. And both of these hit dwindling spirals. And we are different only that we have learned about C as the third corner of the triangle. And we are then specializing in C. Because we have found out it runs out R and improves A.
Got the idea? Now, if we were specializing in C with no attention to R or A, we'd fall on our faces too. The reality of the situation is that we don't always feel blithe and happy about communication. See, we don't always feel cheerful and top dog as an auditor. Tra-la, tra-la. We're standing there and we feel like hell. And so we say, well, spot that person over there. Now, what's happened to the ARC triangle? We've introduced a lie into it. We have said the A was up and it wasn't up. And we have said the R was more solid because we have told a lie about it. The agreement and disagreement there is not expressed. It is hidden and suppressed. Follow me? So there wasn't communication. If there isn't affinity and there isn't reality, then there isn't communication. It's all very well for the Christian church to have accepted A, and the later magician to have accepted A as their primary principle on this affinity, reality, and communication triangle. They could accept affinity and carry on with it as long as they didn't come a cropper with R and C. Now, they've gone out of communication with the society. There aren't enough ministers in the Christian world left to rally around. Well, I don't think there are enough to take care of the epidemic of one city. I mean, to come around and pat everybody on the back and do the job. I mean, it's just one of the major cities of the world were sick. There are not enough Christian ministers to attend to the city from its spiritual needs and wants. I mean, this is a little tiny handful. That's some fantastically small number. Very, very small. You ought to really look that up to tell yourself the score on it. We thought of Christianity as this powerful and oversweeping force and so forth, and here's this little handful of guys. There's nobody occupying this post anymore. Why? Because they said, it is A. It's affinity. And R went automatic, and so did C. And so they got solider and solider churches, and they themselves became solider and solider, and their ability to talk became less and less apt. And they could no longer express themselves to the people because C was on automatic, and everybody was waiting for God to talk. And he never said a word in 2 millennia. And so we had a wait on silence going. You get that? So here went Christianity. R neglected. The reality of the situation was man was not necessarily somebody designed to live in a monastery or a nunnery. Man was a social animal. Even the Darwinian knew he was a social animal. And we know today, and we can make him into a good social being. And you don't get that in a church where nobody must chew gum, where the women don't have to wear their hats just right, where some joker stands up and throws all his intonations off key. That's communication? Nah. And we limit the communication so that you don't dare say any four-letter words in the vicinity of a minister. You don't dare talk to him about the facts of life. You're supposed to go to church and drop a nickel on the drum or someplace, you know. Drop a sixpence, you know. You're all set. Everything's all set. You had an awful time last night. Besides having betrayed your spouse, you betrayed your sweetheart. And it's all involved. And you sit there as a godly person and drop your sixpence in the collection plate. Well, yeah. That's communication, is it? That's communication? Not. So if we put the reality and the communication on automatic, then we could fully and completely expect the whole thing to go down tone scale at a mad rate and descend into no understanding, so that one millennia ago, people trying to explain Christianity to people didn't know what the devil they were explaining, and they all of a sudden, the whole Christian church went into bunches of splinter groups. Nobody knew what he was explaining anymore. It was a big mystery. 100 years ago, it got so bad that they were trying to explain, and their understanding was in this ratio and this area. God is good. 50 years ago, 60 years ago. God is good. God is all. Man is evil. We said, well, wait a minute. Whoa, put on those brakes now. Now, let's look this over quietly. You say man is evil. Is that right? Yes, that's certainly right. All right. God is all. Is that right? Yes. Well, now, is man a part of God? Well, yes, certainly. Well, now, God is totally good. Is that right? That's right. Man is evil. You say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Now, let's take a closer look at this. Get the idea? Well, it becomes this imponderable, twisted mass of communication that doesn't communicate, because there's no understanding left. And where you don't have understanding, you don't have communication, you don't have reality, and you don't have affinity. And when understanding disappears, you then have a failed movement. There's no understanding anywhere in the movement, but what it's all about, you know that, one, it can't be communicated, two, it'll get solid, and three, the affinity will go down to hate just as sure as the sun rises. You see what happens then when we put two corners of a three-cornered triangle on automatic and let them take care of themselves? They just won't function, that's all. But sitting above this whole triangle is the very, very fascinating an interesting thing, a fascinating thing, a wonderful thing. It all derives from consideration. And if you change the consideration, you can change any corner of the triangle. And therefore, getting a person to change his considerations by this or that can be affected. And it can be affected by changing the mesh which is nearest to him so that he can notice it shifting. And that's the lowest level of auditing you should do. Or by changing an individual's factors by making him observe his environment and his situation and his problems. Got it? We can make him consider in the level of viewing his environment. And he views, and as he views, he overhauls and looks at the ideas he has on automatic. And having these ideas on automatic, he can take control of them and look over them and find out they are his ideas and change them as he wills. Now, therefore, we do have levels that can change this. But what are we trying to change? We're trying to change a fellow's ability to consider and postulate. That's what we're really trying to change. We're really not changing his ability to be, his ability to have, and his ability to do, only insofar as these are influenced by his ability to change his mind, which is totally. See? If he can totally change his mind, he could totally change beingness, doingness, and havingness. But we can't change his beingness, doingness, and havingness unless he changes his mind. Or we can change it very slightly. Of course, you can always change a fellow's havingness by shooting his body. But let me call to your attention, he's still got a body, he's got a hole in it. We might not change his mind at all. He thought we were a bum, we proved it. That's war. They think we're no good and we prove it. We think they're no good and they prove it. All right. Here then is the most significant of all data in Scientology. the most interesting and most worthwhile data in the field of Scientology. Is first, the ARC triangle, so that we can then observe and compartment man's types of consideration, so we know what we mean when we say consider, see? And thereby, having defined consider for our listener, by pointing out the ARC triangle, to say that man's ability to change his mind about these factors is the only thing you can do with man if you want to improve him. And the therapy on which we're engaged is to take the lightest, mildest, and tiniest, and most intimate things near him, the things that are closest to being ideas, and shake them up a little bit so the fellow will say, maybe I could change my mind about that. And so we run a gradient scale of changing the mind. And this is the anatomy of the mind. The ARC triangle brings about and is understanding. And when it's summed all the way up, that's what it is. And we can use these three corners any way we like, but we must not use them separately, leaving the other two on automatic. Communication is by far the most important corner of the triangle, because the practice of communication can, as is reality, and change the affinity. Either way, communication is the action of the triangle, and the other two remain out of action, except they just are isnesses, except in the presence of communication, which is basically an altering of isness without liability. Now, we can alter isness and alter not isness and alter isness without liability, so long as we do it by communication or postulates. Naturally, we can do it by communication. We can also do it just by postulates. And thereby, we can bring about a change in the whole triangle and thus change the individual's ability to understand. Now, psychometric testing demonstrates today that the processes, the very processes which we're using right now, used well and carefully, constantly and consistently improve the ability of the individual to understand, even to understand not knowingness, which is the darndest thing you ever heard of. Well, we've gotten to a point where we just don't know or not know, as the case may be, but we also understand and can consider the anatomy of and handle the subject of and the masses of not knowingness. We are in an interesting position, and we certainly have departed from the realm of former philosophy. Spencer almost got it there. He said, there is the knowable and the unknowable. And now we've bettered Spencer quite a bit. We now have a thing called an understanding of the unknowable, complete to all of its unknowability. And if that isn't insouciant, that is one of the most impertinent, sauciest things that any group ever thought of doing. Well, Scientology is a total understanding of the knowable and unknowable. And you see to where and whence we have arrived. Now, I'm sure that there are shortcuts. I'm sure there are things that we don't yet do with perfection in the handling of these things. I'm sure of this. I'm sure we will even find additional phenomena which will be wonderful to behold and speed things up. We know the realm in which we'll find them. We know this pretty well. But I also know that when we are able to know the knowable and the unknowable, and better still, to understand the unknowable and the knowable, we've certainly arrived somewhere that nobody ever arrived before. And it might be kind of dark around here. but there are an awful lot of us understanding it and coming into an understanding of it, and that makes an awful lot of data of comparable magnitude, so there's no danger in standing here. You see this now? Now maybe in this brief talk you understand where we have gone with research and investigation. And maybe with this morning's talks you understand that what we're doing is not new, novel, or strange. We are just doing it without much liability and with greater ability than man has done it before. And as far as our technology and our theories are concerned, they are consistent from 1950 forward. Now, the whole subject of auditing is only a subject as long as it is a live subject, therefore. And when it ceases to be a live subject and becomes itself a mechanical subject, it ceases to be a subject. It ceases to be anything more than a wound-up doll. Unless we have ARC at work in the auditing session, unless we pay some attention to the realities of the session, we don't get anywhere with the session because we don't understand what we're doing. Okay? Thank you.